Good evening, board members, ladies and gentlemen of the audience, staff. I guess that's all the categories. Welcome to this regular meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Lahontan Region. My name is Pete Pumphrey. I'm from Chalfont, California, and I am the board chair. I want to thank you very much for coming to this meeting. We welcome your comments, ideas, and participation because they helped us to do a better job. At this time, I would like to introduce the other members of the regional board. To my immediate right, Don Jardine, vice chair from Markleyville. To my far right, Dr. Amy Horn from Truckee. To my far left, Eric Sandell from Truckee. And by the magic of television from our Victorville office, Kimberly Cox from Hellendale. Is that a parade wave or? And Keith Diaz from Rosamond. Our executive officer is Patty Kuyumjin. Ms. Kuyumjin, would you please introduce the staff?
Yes, and good evening, everyone. In our audience, we have Lori Kemper, our assistant executive officer, in the back. To my left are Elizabeth Barrett, our legal counsel, Kathy Odermatt, our board clerk, and Michelle Avila, also our clerk, who's helping us this evening. We have in the audience Scott Ferguson, our division manager up here, Doug Smith, our division manager in Tahoe as well. We have Eric Taxer in the audience, and Mr. Doug Cushman as well. I hope I didn't miss anyone. But we have two guests.
You did.
Did I? Oh, Kathy Poole, my apologies. You'll hear from her in a bit. Guests from our state board, Lori Oaken and Nick Knight. Thank you.
Thank you. The regional board will be considering many items during this meeting. Please feel free to comment on any item so that our decision will be based on all of the available information. If you wish to speak on an agenda item, please fill out the orange card in the back of the room and hand that card to Kathy Odermatt, our board clerk. Also, please respect the board members, staff, presenters, and your fellow citizens. Everyone's views should be heard. If a lot of people want to speak, I may place time limits on presentations. If you have any written materials as part of the agenda item, please hand copies to Kathy Odermatt, and she will distribute them. So that we can have an accurate administrative record, please speak after I call your name and invite you to come to the lectern. Please communicate your ideas clearly and efficiently. And those of you who do speak at the lectern, I've been asked to ask you to speak with enthusiasm and vigor so that the people in our Victorville office will be able to clearly hear you and we can get your statements on the record. So thank you. Item one on the agenda is public forum. Any person may address the Water Board regarding a matter within the Water Board's jurisdiction that is not related to an item on the meeting agenda or currently pending before the Water Board. Is there anyone who wishes to speak to the board on a matter not a part of the agenda? Hearing and seeing none. Item two is the minutes of the regular meeting of the board of April 19 and 20, 2017, which was held in Barstow, California. Are there any corrections or comments with respect to the minutes? Is there a potential motion with respect to the minutes?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the minutes.
Thank you.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you.
Dr. Horn?
Aye.
Mr. Jardine?
Aye.
Mr. Sandell?
Aye.
Ms. Cox?
Aye.
Mr. Dias?
Aye.
And Chair Pumphrey?
Aye. Item three of the agenda is a public hearing, consideration of a settlement agreement and stipulated order between the United States Forest Service, Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit, and the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board regarding the Meeks Bay Resort Marina, El Dorado County, California. The Regional Water Quality Control Board, Lahontan Region, will consider adopting a settlement agreement and stipulated order between the Lahontan Water Board and the United States Forest Service Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit. The proposed settlement agreement and stipulated order will resolve and correct ongoing stormwater management issues and alleged permit violations and requirements of the Lahontan Basin Plan. To consider adopting the agreement, the board is conducting the hearing as follows. We will begin by testimony by the Water Board prosecution team. We'll be followed by testimony by the discharger, and lastly, presentations by interested persons. All persons who wish to participate and have not yet submitted an appearance card are requested to do so now, and you must note which agenda item you wish to speak on. This hearing will not be conducted according to the technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any testimony that is reasonably relevant to the matter under consideration. The chair may impose reasonable time limits and may require groups to choose a single spokesperson. We ask each person testifying to come to the lectern to speak. Please begin by stating your name, address, and whom you represent. All persons who expect to testify, would you please stand and raise your right hand and take the following oath? Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony which you will give in this matter is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Thank you. So first, I'd ask for testimony from the Water Board prosecution team.
Good evening, Chairman and members of the board. My name is Lori Kemper, and I'm the Assistant Executive Officer with the Lahontan Water Board. And first, I'd like to make some introductions. We have special guests here tonight. Chairman Neil Mortimer is here from the Washoe Tribe, and Jean Mortimer is the counsel for the Washoe Tribe. So they're joining us today. They are not part of this agreement, as it's an agreement between the Forest Service, who's the landowner currently, and the Water Board. However, the Washoe Tribe does manage the resort and operate the resort at Meeks Bay at this time, and obviously has a long-standing connection to that very special place at Lake Tahoe. So tonight, we also have the members of the teams that worked on the settlement agreement. So we have Jeff Marcellet, who's the forest supervisor from the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit, Teresa McClung, who's the deputy forest supervisor, Heather Knoll, who's in charge of public affairs at the Forest Service, the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit, and then the Water Board staff that's been involved. Eric Taxers, the lead enforcement staff on the case, Kathy Pools, the enforcement unit chief, Scott Ferguson is our division manager, and Nick Knight is from the Office of Enforcement. He's our counsel who's advised us on this matter tonight. In addition, Doug Cushman is here, and he may be seen as part of your technical advisory team, but I also know that as chief of the Nonpoint Source Unit, he and his staff will be involved in the future of Meeks Bay in terms of our role in being a CEQA lead for projects that occur in the Meeks Creek area. Tonight, I plan to make some opening remarks, and then Kathy Poole will be making the formal presentation, and that's the presentation that's found in your agenda packet. And then she'll be followed by Jeff Marcellet, who would like to make some closing remarks. And then I've invited Chairman Mortimer to add some additional thoughts or answer questions for the board. And we're all available to answer questions as we move forward tonight. So Water Board staff and the Forest Service staff have met on several occasions to discuss ways to achieve compliance at the Meeks Bay Resort. Simple BMPs, including pavement and infiltration, are all that are needed to comply with the basin plan and past permitting requirements at the site. However, luckily for all of us, the Forest Service and the Washoe Tribe have identified a greater need to more comprehensively address the site and optimize environmental and recreational benefits for the public and the natural ecosystem. Jeff and the Washoe Tribe are committed to increasing watershed resiliency and restoring many of the natural elements of Meeks Creek and its former lagoonal system at the edge of the Lake Tahoe. This agreement represents a strong public commitment from the Forest Service to do more than what is right, to do what is best for Lake Tahoe, for wildlife, and for wetlands, and for future generations of visitors to Lake Tahoe. This agreement is the best way forward to hold the Forest Service accountable to the Water Board and the public to meet the deadlines and to ensure that a future environmental improvement project is completed at Meeks Bay. Sorry. Anybody who's been to Meeks Bay knows it's a special place, and we all look forward to your support and approval of this agreement and allowing us to focus on the steps ahead to accomplish a remarkable project. And I ask Kathy to give the presentation.
Good evening, board and members of the public, the Washoe Tribe. Kathy Poole, I'm presenting for the prosecution team. And I just want to point out that there was a late addition to your packet, and it's Bates pages 3-69, is a response to the advisory team comments. It includes an inspection by the Forest Service in April and as-built for the interim best management practices that are currently in place. And then Bates pages 3-97 are this presentation. Now, do I just push the middle button?
Mm-hmm. Oh, let me go to your right. Probably fell asleep.
And Kathy, could you be sure to say turn slide so that people in Victorville can move forward with you when you change?
I'm turning slide. I'm trying to turn the slide. Okay. So this slide is a USGS topo map, and I wanted to include it because it shows that Meeks Creek, you know, starts high in the mountains, and it flows quite a long ways, and then it goes through the beautiful Meeks Meadow before it enters Meeks Bay. So it's just a reminder that this is not just about the marina, it's about the whole ecosystem of Meeks Creek. Turn slide. And this is a photo I found on the Forest Service website of the of Meeks Bay before the marina. So there was a little small development there, and then you can see the closed mouth of the creek, which is A, and then B is the lagoon, which is backed up behind that, and then C are some marshy plants that are native natural habitat, and D was an old fill area, looks like some beach sand that they were depositing there, and E showed some recent grading. So this may be something to shoot for in returning the creek to previous habitat. Okay, so this is a short history of Meeks Bay Resort and Marina. Since the resort opened in 1920, and then the marina was constructed in 1961, and in 1980, Lake Tahoe Basin Plan was adopted. And the 1980 Basin Plan included criteria for sediment load reduction through best management practices to control stormwater from commercial parking lots. Lahontan made commercial parking lot best management improvements a priority. Okay, turn slide. And moving forward, the Lake Tahoe Marina General Permit was first issued in 2000, and the Forest Service Stormwater Pollution Prevention Plan, that's the SWIP acronym there, included parking lot paving and stormwater infiltration as early as 2000. The general permit was then reissued in 2005 and again in 2011, and the parking lot was included in the SWIPs for those permits also. Then in 2014, staff did an inspection on Meeks Bay, and that inspection resulted in the first notice of violation that you can find at Bates page 3-21. Subsequent to that, staff did a re-inspection of Meeks Bay Marina, and that resulted in the second notice of violation that was issued in October 2015, and you can find that at Bates page 3-33. The hallmark of the Marina General Permit was to improve stormwater best management practices so that impacts to the lake at the marinas were diminished. And that's something that the NOVs were dealing with for Meeks Bay. In 2016, Lahontan staff entered into settlement discussions with the Forest Service, and the marina was closed when the Forest Service and the Washoe Tribe took the initiative to close the marina and install the interim BMPs to stop future violations. Oh, turn slide. This is a picture of the marina in its previous operations. Turn slide. This is an aerial of the creek going into the marina as it is today, and the boat ramp you can see, and then the outlet to the lake.
So, Ms. Poulett, looking at this slide, could you point out the boundaries of the area that's being covered by this proposed settlement agreement?
Does this have a
there's a laser on there, on the podium? There's a laser pointer.
This? Okay, so the boundaries of the parking lot? Oh, the future project. Well, the boundaries of the future project have not been defined. Is that
your
question?
No, the boundaries that are described in the settlement agreement, I forget what number finding it is, but.
Generally, it's the parking lot in this area, and then underneath the trees, you can't really see. So you can see that sand, and then the edge of the marina.
So how far docks. North? I mean, so the stream is the boundary on the south, and the road is on the west, and the lake is on the east, but how far north is the boundary of the area covered by this order?
I don't think you can see it very well. It's underneath the trees there. And then in this area, so in the north, that is the ramp, and there's some dirt leading up to the ramp, and then I think in here there's also dirt. But this is the main parking lot.
It said that there was fence posts that delineated the north end?
Are they under the trees?
Just give me a general idea of where they are.
I know folks that I'm probably should be up here, but like right, it's right around here.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Turn slide. This is one photo of some BMPs that are slightly eroded and not being well maintained that was taken in 2015. I don't know if you can even see the core log. Okay, turn slide. So these are some supporting facts as to the benefits of the stipulated agreement. The Forest Service and the Washoe Tribe need a permanent solution as to the now closed Meeks Marina facility. In the stipulated agreement, the Forest Service agrees to begin the planning process to evaluate alternatives for the site that include watershed improvements in and around Meeks Creek. The Forest Service, in discussions with the Washoe, understood that the complexity of resolving the violations was not a simple fix and embraced embarking on a planning project to best incorporate protection of the environment. This agreement is the best vehicle available to hold the Forest Service accountable. Alternatively, if we had not reached an agreement with the Forest Service, we could have asked you to consider a cease and desist order, which would have imposed this schedule on them. But by reaching an agreement between the parties, it shows their commitment to meeting that schedule and improving the environment for Meeks Bay. They have already ceased discharging sediment into the lake by closing their marina and installing the interim best management practices. This is a Forest Service commitment to the process and to the outcome. The Forest Service is committing to the Water Board and to the public to complete this project on this timeline. Simply paving or installing permanent BMPs is not prudent at this time. The stipulated agreement includes milestones to ensure that the Forest Service will complete the project, and it will involve the public and the Washoe in the final outcome. Okay, next slide. So some of the requirements in the stipulated agreement were to install the interim BMPs and maintain them. So the BMPs have been installed, and as a result of the inspection, we know that they weathered this huge winter quite well, so we're pretty happy about that. And then the Forest Service will report every year by November 15th on their inspections and the status of the BMPs. So the next, the Forest Service will be issuing a joint notice of intent and notice of preparation of the NEPA CEQA TRPA process. If you want me to spell out those acronyms, I would be happy to. Everyone knows? Okay, so that's due by July 2017, and that is to conduct project scoping. The first phase assessment results for the project are due by November of 2017. That will include multi-benefit success criteria. The multi-benefit success criteria will align with Forest Service goals and will be applied to the future project. Those goals include restoring aquatic habitat and marshes for their unique biologic diversity, restoring the connections of channels and water tables, including lagoonal features, and restoring the condition of stream banks and shorelines to minimize erosion and sustain habitat diversity. Okay, next slide. So continuing on with the stipulated agreement requirements, the draft EIS EIR is due out for public comment by July 2018. The EIS is the Environmental Impact Statement, and the EIR is the Environmental Impact Report. The final EIS, EIR, and draft Record of Decision are due by July 2019. A final Record of Decision is due December 2019. Final design plans are due December 2022. Construction is due to be completed November 2025. And during that time, the Forest Service will be providing the board with annual reports describing the progress of the project beginning in March of 2018. Oh. Next slide. So these two next two slides are addressing questions from the advisory team. We also provided a memo with a much more detailed responses. I'll just go over them quickly. The question was, are the BMP inspections twice a year adequate? And we believe they are, and they're laid out in the agreement. Second question is BMP design criteria. How does that compare with the Water Board's design criteria? And the Forest Service used a 10-year, 24-hour storm, which results in 2 inches of water, and our requirement is to design your stormwater facilities for 1 inch of water. And again, after this winter, which I'm sure they had more than 2 inches at one time, the BMPs made it and protected the lake, so I think that worked out well. Item number three, the stipulation wording intends could be amended to agrees if that's at the pleasure of the board. Number four, the project will be defined in the planning process. So we can't define the project, the full extent of the project now. It'll be a result of the planning process. Number five, Lahontan Forest Service and TRPA, along with the public and the tribe, intend to holistically evaluate future uses and potential for an environmental improvement project at Meeks Bay and Meeks Creek with an emphasis on environmental restoration, not just paving the parking lot. Number six, the Forest Service will use their best efforts to ensure funding availability. Number seven.
Next slide.
Thank you. Lahontan approved the temporary best management practice as-built December 6, 2016, and again, they've functioned well over the winter. Number eight, project permitting. How is this different from any other project? The permitting process won't be any different. It's the planning and the scoping of this project that will that makes it different. And then the timeline is set up in this agreement so that they will hit all the dates that we've set up. Number nine, what is the operation plan for the marina for the next 7 years? The Meeks Bay Resort will continue to operate for the foreseeable future. However, the special use permit has been modified to exclude the marina use. So the marina is not expected to reopen, subject to the outcome of the federal decision-making process. Next slide. Okay, so the prosecution team is excited to be a part of the solution to a long-standing source of erosion and sediment discharge to Lake Tahoe and to implement a more comprehensive solution and to involve more than just the direct discharge from the parking lot. It is inspirational to be a part of a future plan to possibly restore the creek aquatic system and habitat, wildlife habitat at Meeks Bay. So staff respectfully recommends to the board to authorize the executive officer to sign the agreement. Any questions?
Take questions from members of the board. Ms. Cox, any questions?
Thank you, Chair Pumphrey. I just had one question on slide Bates State 3-108, item number 2. It relates to the 2 inches of rain. Can you help me understand that metric? That does not seem like much rain up in your area.
Okay, so the Lahontan Board requires that stormwater facilities be designed for 1 inch of rain, which is equivalent to the 20-year, one-hour rainstorm. So it's just a different rainstorm that the Forest Service uses for their design criteria, and it's the 10-year, 24-hour rain, which is equivalent to 2 inches of rain total. So it's 1 inch versus 2 inch for the design. So for the 2 inches of rain, you get double the size of your stormwater facilities.
Okay, so it's a more stringent metric.
Yes.
Thank you. No other questions.
Thank you. Mr. Dias?
Yes, I have one question. Kathy, I believe you mentioned earlier that future plans may or may not include a marina. But if it does not include the marina, what other recreational elements would the resort offer?
From our perspective, the prosecution team, we're not prejudging what the future recreation possibilities could be, and that will be an outcome of the planning process. I've heard kayaks, you know, stuff like that, where they're not requiring a boat and trailer. I don't know. That's just something that has been tossed around as an option.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Sandell.
Thank you. I have one question. Could you explain on 109.9 the federal decision-making process and how it might impinge on the outcome of whether or not there'll be a marina?
Okay, so in my understanding, if the public and the Forest Service want to add that as an option to evaluate, they want to keep the marina in as a use, then it will go through the same ranking criteria as other options which don't include a marina. So it would have to rank high enough to be included as the final project.
So it isn't going to be the group operating the marina who decides whether the whole thing, whether there's a marina or not, but the Forest Service will decide in the end through this decision-making process that there's supposed to be a marina, and whoever's the concessionaire will have to have a marina?
The Forest Service?
I'll handle all of this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll wait for an answer.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Mr. Jardine.
Excuse me. One point of clarification in my mind. On Bates page 3-108, item 3, the stipulation wording intent should be amended to agrees. Is that your recommendation?
Okay, per my counsel, both parties have stipulated, will stipulate to that if it's the pleasure of the board.
Thank you.
Dr. Horn.
Thank you. So the outlines of the project that have been described are very exciting, and I understand why it is impossible to be more definitive about what the project will be until the NEPA process is completed. There have been instances in here when, in this basin, when agencies have had all the best intentions, and the NEPA CEQA process has gone sideways, and so the good intentions of the agencies weren't able to be implemented. For example, the state parks project on the Upper Truckee for the golf course. Having experienced that example, I'm a little nervous about incorporating a NEPA process into a cease and desist order, essentially. So I'll just say that. But that's not to take away from how excited I am about the potential for this project. I have a few questions. The therefore statement says that the U.S. Forest Service shall cease and desist from discharging waste in violation of the basin plan and the 2011 marina general permit.
One second.
What?
Something happened.
Something happened and we lost Victorville for a second.
We can hear you, but the TV and the camera seem to be rebooting.
Oh, no, it's just us. Me.
No, thank you for noticing that.
Can you see us?
No.
We cannot. Okay. Can you see us?
We cannot.
But we can hear you. And you can hear us.
Rebecca, are you there?
Yes.
I'm selected Victorville. And it seemed to not have picked up.
We just see a blue screen.
Can you try connecting to the annex?
There's nothing to connect to. We don't see anything.
I'm trying to connect. I'm calling Victorville on the video conference. Can you maybe switch it off and try restarting your video conference system?
It looks like it's trying to, here, it's starting again. So, can you see us now?
No.
I'm calling.
There it is. Yay.
Okay.
Okay. Pardon me, Dr. Horn.
Put me out of my misery.
Restarting my question.
Thank you.
So it says, the therefore statement says, the U.S. Forest Service shall cease and desist from discharging waste in violation of the basin plan and the 2011 Marina General Permit. How can the Water Board hold the Forest Service accountable for complying with the 2011 Marina General Permit if it expired on October 31st, 2016?
That was the permit that they were operating under. They never applied for the new permit, so that's the permit that they were in violation of.
But it expired, so how can we hold them accountable to that
because
permit
at the time,
into the future?
Sorry, at the time that they were in violation, they were in violation of the 2011 permit.
Okay, I don't feel that that's answered my question because the permit has expired. So how can you hold them accountable to that permit if it has expired?
It's the same for any permit. You, as the discharger, are operating under a certain permit, and if you are in violation, you're in violation of the permit that you're operating under, not the new permit.
But the permit has expired.
But it hadn't expired in 2015 when they got the violations. The permit expired in 2016, and their violations were in 2014 and 2015 when they were operating under the 2011
permit. But this is shall
permit.
Cease and desist.
Can this I chime in here?
Pardon me?
Let me chime in. This is Elizabeth Barrett, your counsel. Sorry, can you hear me? The 2016 permit had some language when it was rescinded that for enforcement purposes, that would remain for enforcement purposes.
Yeah.
And this is Nick Knight from the Office of Enforcement. I would say that conduct that occurs during the period when a permit is in force, once you've moved on to the next permit, it is common, but I think accepted practice to continue that permit for purposes of enforcement, if that's the case. I would just also say that the important verbiage, I think, in this agreement right now is the basin plan language, and that would be what we would look at going forward. But at the time of those violations, it was that marina permit.
Okay, I guess I will accept that the basin plan is the more important language. It's just that this is a forward-looking statement about a permit that's expired, so that's sort of confusing to me, but that's okay.
I would just like to add that they have ceased and desisted.
I understand that. I understand that. Yeah. But so in stipulation number 4, who is responsible for submitting the inspection reports?
The Forest Service.
It doesn't state that. So would it be possible to include the language that the Forest Service agrees to submit?
Forgive me, I didn't hear the last question.
Stipulation number 4 does not indicate who is responsible for submitting the inspection reports.
Since there's only two parties to the agreement, it would either be the Water Board or the Forest Service.
Well, it does on almost every other stipulation. It's clear who's responsible.
Okay.
I haven't discussed this directly with the Forest Service, but I think it's clear. I believe it's clear from the agreement that it's incumbent upon them to provide those reports. We could discuss amending that language.
Yeah. What would be the downside of including that language?
I have no objection. I without speaking to Ms. Kemper, I don't know that there is a downside to including that language.
Okay. Also in stipulation 4, it has in parentheses per number 4 above, and since that's in number 4, I'm wondering if that's a typo? Or is it?
Yeah, it should be 3, I think.
Okay, so that.
Number 3 above, which is discussing inspections.
Okay, so that should get
that's
fixed.
That's a type, yeah. That's, thank you.
And then the same thing in number 6, that again, it doesn't indicate who is responsible for submitting the results of the first phase of the assessment. Okay. If the U.S. Forest Service did not meet the deadlines in the settlement agreement, what enforcement ability would the Water Board have?
We would likely be back in front of you with a cease and desist order ordering them to meet the deadlines. And Nick will add.
So, and I'm just going to jump in here. The relationship between two sovereigns in an instance like this, when one of them is the federal government, is complicated with regard to enforcement. And so if for some reason the Forest Service doesn't do what they've indicated they're going to do time and again since we've begun this conversation, then the first step would likely be a time schedule order. In the future, there perhaps could be some other enforcement mechanisms that we could use. There are some sovereign immunity issues that present themselves when you are trying to compel the federal government to do things, and some prohibitions on the manner in which you would compel them to do things. For instance, there's the Tucker Act, which would prohibit specific performance as a remedy if we were to get into superior court. So that could be a complicated question in the future, and something we've discussed somewhat. Certainly from our perspective, the importance of this agreement is the commitment from the Forest Service to conduct themselves according to these dates. But the first step to answer your question would be a time schedule order. There's also some decisional law that describes some of the further immunities, for instance, to penalties that the federal government would have. And so so those mechanisms that we might have for a normal for a different discharger that wasn't a sovereign, we don't have those in this instance. So it's a complicated question.
Okay, so while you're standing there then, what's the advantage of the approach taken here versus a standard cease and desist order?
Well, this is a settlement agreement. The authority that it invokes is precisely the same authority that you have for a cease and desist order. It's section 13301 of the Water Code. So while this is a settlement agreement, its legal force and effect is similar, if not exactly the same, as a cease and desist order. That's part of what it is. And so I don't know that there's an advantage from a legal perspective. I think from a practical perspective, this allowed us to work in a collaborative manner with the Forest Service that I think probably increases the likelihood that we'll be able to get or possibly achieve some of the lofty goals that we have.
Can you elaborate on that last statement? Why does it increase the likelihood of achieving the goals?
Because they've already, in our discussions, we've discussed some of the different possibilities for what would come of the planning process. Our ability to compel them to do specific things, if we just decided to be at loggerheads and argue this out, it could be limited in some ways. And so through this collaborative process, we've been able to, I think, start to look at bigger projects, bigger ideas, versus what I think was sort of a small discussion of whether or not the parking lot needs to be paved.
All right. Yeah, I'm not opposed to the bigger ideas. I like the bigger ideas. I'm uncomfortable with how much control does the Forest Service have over meeting deadlines of a NEPA process? I mean, it seems to me that there are factors that are outside of the, and maybe this is something more that Supervisor Marcellet can speak to when it's his turn, but direction comes from the Washington office. Direction comes from the regional office. Budgets get cut. Money goes to fighting forest fires. I mean, there are things that are outside of the control of the basin management unit that might derail the timeline that's set out here for this larger project, and that's something I'm uncomfortable with. Can you say anything to reassure me on that?
Well, frankly, no, not that much. Mr. Marcellet probably can speak to that better than I can.
All right.
There, as I said, there are some limits to our ability to compel certain behaviors, and we don't have all of the same sticks that we would with a different discharger. And so I think it's important to engage this collaborative process because perhaps we can have some carrots in there instead. That's the way that we've approached it.
Okay. Where in the agreement does it require that the marina will remain closed until a permanent stormwater management plan is implemented?
I don't think that it does require that specifically. At this point, the permit for a marina going forward, they don't have a permit for that. They've amended the special use permit that they have with the Washoe Tribe to exclude the use of a marina. So my understanding from both a state law regulatory view and a federal law view, a marina is no longer allowed there unless and until the federal planning process provides for the reopening of one, in which case we would have to re-engage that permitting aspect.
Okay. How does a minimum of 2 inspections per year ensure that the temporary BMPs will remain fully functional for 8.5 years until November 1st, 2025?
I think that I would defer to my technical staff on that question because that's probably outside of my area of expertise, Ms. Poole.
That's the typical inspection frequency for marinas, and since this no longer has a marina, we figured that that would be adequate, and it's before the fall, the winter, some in the fall, and then again in the spring. And during those inspections, if they see anything that they need to fix and maintain, then that will be something that they have to do and report also.
Well, this year, and admittedly it was an exceptional year, there were a number of events that were larger than 2 inches in a 1 hour period. So if we had another winter like that, I mean, you know, 2 inspections a year might miss failure of the temporary BMPs. It seems to me we're asking a lot of these temporary BMPs to function for 8.5 years.
I think that's why we included the as-builts, because if you look at the as-builts, you didn't think that was, I'm just curious. So the as-builts include the design of the berm, which holds back the stormwater, and it's a huge detention basin, so it's able to maintain and detain the stormwater behind the berm, and it goes all the way around the parking lot. So the whole lake is protected by this berm.
Where does the agreement require the Basin Management Unit to design a monitoring and reporting system that will give the Water Board assurance that the temporary BMPs remain fully functional?
There is no monitoring, like sample taking. The monitoring would be the inspection portion. And then they're required to report the results of their inspections and any maintenance, corrective actions.
This is Lori Kemper. Just to help Kathy, Eric and I were out on the site a couple times last summer, and I know Kathy was out just recently looking at the site after the winter. And what Kathy's saying, just to get a better picture in your mind, is the Forest Service has created additional volume by building these ponds and these berms. And I think what's important is the ponds themselves and the swales, some of, you might call them linear ponds, but they're swales. The capacity in the excavated area is the volume of the 2 inches in an hour. There's a couple things you have to think about. One, it's a very sandy area. So that means that water is not being just held there and more water is adding on top of it. It's percolating into the sand. The second thing that's really important is that if there is more than 2 inches of rain in 24 hours, water will pond. It will not overflow to the lake or to Meeks Creek. Water will back up to the former parking lot, which is no longer really being used as a parking lot. So the Forest Service covered the dirt parking area with chipped material, and the Washoe Tribe has not decided how often or how that area will be used in the summer. There may be certain events where it'll be sort of overflow parking for the beach area, but it really is a very large area that traditionally had been used when the marina was operating for boat trailers and the boating folks. And so it's a large area where water would pond. Okay, so it's sort of different than the typical temporary BMPs. We're talking a silt fence. That's why we started to call them interim BMPs, because frankly, the construction that the Forest Service did was quite a bit more than what the former marina operator had done, which was just really temporary BMPs like Quarlog, because they had to maintain the ability for vehicles to get around and access to the boat ramp. Now there's essentially a swale between the edge of the parking lot and the boat ramp, and that swale goes the whole length along Meeks Creek, and there's a berm. And then, like I said, the water, if there's too much of it, will back up across that disturbed area that will, you know, that's covered with chips or needles right now, and that will just pond water. So that's why we feel confident that two inspections per year are sufficient, because there's really no place for the water to go but backwards onto the site. And you know, having someone out there twice a year to make sure the berm hasn't been broken down. I mean, we're aware that kids on bicycles and other things, or kids with shovels for that matter, or anybody could take apart the berm. But you know, the Washoe Tribe are out there every day. I mean, they're operating a resort year round, or at least summer when the people are there, so they'll be able to observe any major damage to a berm. But those berms look effective to us in the form that they're at.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Where does the agreement give a date certain by which the permanent stormwater management plan is implemented?
That's not in the agreement.
So,
well, 2025, yeah, when the project is complete, they will have to have a stormwater pollution prevention plan for whatever project is built. But it's not specifically called out at the end of the project. 2025 for its it'll be part of the design of the facilities and will be implemented as part of the project.
Okay. And then I mean, this is a question that already board member Jardine asked, but it's like that any place where it says the Forest Service intends, that will be replaced with the Forest Service agrees to their...
When that was presented to us, this is Nick Knight from the Office of Enforcement. When that was presented to us from the executive officer as one of the questions, we only discussed that in the context of one location. So our stipulation only extends so far as to that location. I'm not sure that it appeared in one place, more than one place.
Yeah.
I would have to review that.
It's number 5, number 7, number 8, 9, 10, 11.
I can certainly discuss that with Mr. Marcellet and his counsel, but I don't think that there's probably much controversy about amending those instances to the word agrees.
Thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Dr. Horn. I don't think that I have any questions with respect to the facts that underlie the situation. To the extent that I have questions or concerns, they really go to the nature of the agreement in quotes. And I'm beginning to think that, or see, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm having a kind of a hard time understanding why I'm having a level of discomfort with what's being presented to us, but I think it's because the nature of the relationship between the parties is such that the things that we're accustomed to ordering as part of an order, those tools, as it were, are not available to us with this particular discharger. Is that correct?
It's my contention that because of our relationship with of dual sovereignty, there are some things that we're not going to be able to order. For instance, we couldn't order before the fact what the result would be of their decision-making process, and they can't commit before the fact of what the result of their decision-making process is. And so neither could we compel them to do that, nor could they agree to it before the fact. And so we have to leave those things in this somewhat nebulous framework if we're going to try to proceed with this project.
I'd like to just chime in there. This is Elizabeth Barrett, your counsel. We do have the authority to regulate the U.S. Forest Service under a cease and desist order. And so it seems like counsel for prosecution is referring to certain terms or conditions, but overall, we have authority to regulate the U.S. Forest Service under our 13267 authority and our cease and desist authority.
Okay, so let me get to that.
Which, and I would just echo, that's what this agreement is. It's a cease and desist order. These are the things that we're agreeing on, or these are the that's the authority for the agreement.
Well, then I guess I can jump ahead in my little list here. In as much as the Forest Service agrees to cease and desist doing what it agrees to cease and desist, it does not seem to me that it would do an awful lot of violence to the nature of the document to include the word cease and desist, or the phrase cease and desist order, as part of the initial heading of it. On the other hand, I'm sure I can hear you make the argument that since they agree to cease and desist, to the extent that their agreement is enforceable, we already have that. I think that what I'm concerned about, and when I hear you say we cannot compel them to do specific things, I think I understand that to mean we can't tell them what the project would look like or how the project would be designed or how the project would be implemented or specific as to how it would be go through the approval process. What I'm wondering is whether or not we can talk about in the agreement and or order, whatever we want to call this thing that we have in front of us, a definition of the project in terms of the outcomes that we wish to achieve at the hydrological level within the geographic unit. I think that I understand the goals that we're trying to achieve here, and I want to thank everybody. This could not have been fun, and this could not have been a pleasant process in the sense that it's something that we do all the time, and so there's a comfort zone in how to do it, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate the work that has gone into that. It's always been my habit to be wary of agreements to agree. Or things that resemble agreements to agree, because there's a pitfall built into it that nobody wants to see the pit or the fall. But we're talking about an 8-year period of time with an awful lot of uncertainties, and including uncertainty of what would happen if we get out into this calendar that's been presented. And for whatever reason, and I'm certainly in no way suggesting any disingenuousness on the part of anybody who's been involved in this process, but, you know, things happen, and I probably won't be here 8 years from now, God willing. But somebody's going to have to tussle with that question, and usually in an agreement or an order, certainly in an order, there's some guidance contained in there to give you a sense of how you would tussle with that if it comes to pass that what was anticipated doesn't happen. And I'm concerned that that's not here. And if it's not here because it can't be here because of the nature of the parties to the agreement, that's one thing. To the extent that there are things that we cannot, because I'm not here to talk about compelling people in the normal sense of compelling, but if there are things that we cannot direct, then I think we should know what those are. That suggests to me, though, that there are things that we can, And I don't have any sense from this of what those might be and whether or not we've made appropriate choices among those. So that's really not a question. It was more like a speech.
Thank you, Chair Proffitt. But I'm
concerned about those issues. And I really would appreciate either from you or from the Forest Service or for anybody else from Divine Intervention, some guidance and some illumination about how those concerns could be resolved.
I would say from my perspective, I think that it will be important to hear from the Forest Service. I would say from my perspective, this is going to be something that becomes clearer over time. There are some near-term dates whereupon we'll have more information, and the agreement itself specifically has mechanisms for amendment, and we can amend that. We can amend the agreement when the order as time permits and as more information becomes available about where we are in the process. So to the extent that it's an agreement to agree, I agree that those things are laden with pitfalls. However, there are enforceable deadlines in here, again, in the manner that you can enforce on the federal government, to get that information, and perhaps the order in the future then could be clarified by that information.
Okay, here's the problem I'm having with that sentence. What are the enforceable deadlines, and what are the manners in which they can be enforced?
The ones, the near-term deadlines are for the draft plans, for the beginning of the for the draft proposals, and for the issuance of those items to the public, so that we can look at the projects. Now, as for
aren't they all the dates in there could be considered enforceable?
Yes, all of the dates in there need to be met. It's my belief that it's going to be a very complicated process to compel something if they miss those dates. Then the first step in that would be a time schedule order. The next step from that would be some type, what could perhaps be the asking for some penalties based on the failure to comply with that time schedule order. There is important decisional law, I think it's Department of Energy v. Ohio State, that talks about some of these items. And again, when you're dealing with the federal government, your tools are more limited as far as penalties or things of that nature. And so that is why the agreement is constructed in the manner in which it is.
This is Elizabeth Berry, your counsel. One of the enforcement tools that are available to us to enforce a cease and desist order and a 13267 order is a time schedule order under 13308. Under that water code section, we could assess monetary assessments to compel enforcements of certain terms and conditions. 13308 is not for assessing past penalties. It's more for compelling action in terms of the monetary assessment. So that is a tool available to us if certain reports and deadlines are not met, or if the interim BMPs are not meeting the conditions of this order.
Thank you.
I would just concur that that's what I believe I was describing.
I'll take your word for that. Are there any other questions from any board members? Victorville?
No questions.
Anyone here? If not, ask for testimony from the discharger from the Forest Service, please.
Good evening. Jeff Marcellet, I'm the Forest Supervisor for Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit. And I guess I'd like to start with a thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. And thanks for the opportunity to work with the staff. You might remember the last time I was here. In fact, one of the board members said, We're going to bask in the glory of the epic discovery decision, a tri-parties decision between Forest Service, TRPA, and the Water Board to authorize the summer activities up at the ski area. And at that point, I made a commitment to you that we were going to collaborate on solutions moving forward. And I see this as no different. I also want to recognize the chairman of the Washoe Tribe, because much of what we've already done to impact and resolve the water quality issues are at no small price, financially or to the public at large, who have now foregone access to a major recreation facility, at least for an activity type. And I hope the rest of the conversation, I know there's technicalities that we have to resolve in how the statutory law that you are enforcing aligns with what the federal government can or can't be held accountable to. I get that. But the truth is, we checked all that at the door when we sat down as a team to work past that. Because I think in the spirit of collaboration, our intent was to not fight over statutory or regulatory responsibilities or terminology or past practices or communications between staff that, quite frankly, if we had gotten in deep, we could have been mired in our own past. And so for me, as a leader of Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit, working in partnership with Patty and the staff here, we chose a different path. And we have been choosing a different path. And that's by complete intention. I guess I just want to point out that, and I'll try to answer some of the questions, but you know, this business about NEPA and what we do to define the nature of the project and so on and so forth, it would be a violation of the law for me to pre-decide what the outcome is. And so we're in this push-pull tension point around what the focus could be and should be as this project moves forward. And the truth is, we could be mired in the same amount of time arguing over who has what authority to hold each other accountable or to pay fines, and that's just not in anybody's interest, the public included. And so I think for us, for me in the Forest Service, what we've done is really rally around the idea that this is a great opportunity to sit down and pave a new path forward for this site, no pun intended, because quite frankly, the paving of the parking lot would not have resolved the real issue of the site, which is much broader than the marina permit ever considered. And the truth of the matter is, the Washoe Tribe have been working with the Forest Service closely to plan a future for that site that's way bigger than just the marina. And in fact, we'd been working with Patty Kumgen, the executive director, on that path forward that still has time left on that approach. And regardless of all of that, we said, hey, let's sit down, let's meet, let's talk about a path forward. And, you know, whether you call it a prosecution team or a discharger, we could have gotten really wrapped around the axle on all that stuff. And I don't think we or anybody wanted to do that. And because of that, we're looking at a long-term solution that really has the remarkable opportunity to do some things that are great for the water quality of the lake, great for the environment, and also great for the recreating public, who this is a very special place. If you talk to any of the members of the tribe who are on site daily, they talk about generational visit at Meeks. And I've seen them, 30, 40, 50 year kind of visitors, where it's family plus their family plus their family. It's pretty remarkable. And so we have to take that into consideration when we think about the path forward. So it hasn't been easy, and I appreciate the acknowledgement of that. And yet, trying to weave through NEPA and CEQA and TRPA and all the regulatory oversight, and the truth is the financial impact to our partner who's trying to make sure to use revenue generated at the site to put back into the site and create world-class recreation, all that stuff is part of this equation. So for me personally, you know, we are committing to proposed action for restoring the marina. That's a simple, straightforward proposed action. But that's not the only thing we have to consider in NEPA, because we have an existing use at the site that has to be considered in the NEPA process. And how the outcome will go, whether to reconstruct the marina in an environmentally sensitive way that protects water quality and meets the public need, versus restore it in its entirety, I can't weigh in on that until I've read the public comments. But in either case, they have to be environmentally appropriate for the site. That's the one component part. And whether that's in environmental criteria that we establish for the decision or through the NEPA CEQA TRPA process, we'll get there. I'm very